Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
It's the Charlton Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and the guys from the SE7 pod, Paul Sullivan, Rob Sullivan, and Martin Adkins. We're going into the valley, and we're also going out of the valley because, gents, Rebo is off.
Yep, he's finally gone. It's really dragged out this week, hasn't it? The medical took place, I think, a few good days ago, didn't it?
Yeah.
But we were surmising that they were sort of just holding on to sort of weighed up with a bit of good news because we're hoping maybe for a couple of announcements tomorrow. But who knows with this club?
Who knows? It's just madness, isn't it? But, you know, good luck to Joe. He gave us, you know, season and a half of really solid professional performances. And, you know, the lure of Stephen Gerrard, you just can't take it away, can we?
Yeah, absolutely. And he basically, I think that statement he gave us as he left today on Twitter was superb. I think it showed his class. Really unassuming, great humility. I think summed him up since the time he's been at the club, since he set foot through the door and sort of made his way into the first team. I felt he got thrusted into the first team quite early on, like a lot of the youngsters did under Robinson, when we didn't have, you know, players sort of first team nature. We didn't sign that many players, so Rebo came in and sort of gone from strength to strength, and I think he'll do very well. You know, it's up to him where he's chosen. Like Mark says, I think the lure of playing under Gerrard is quite strong, so good luck to him.
Do we think it's just the lure of playing under Gerrard, or do Rangers have more to offer than that?
Well, I mean, I suppose they do have European football. I suppose that's a lure, and I suppose, you know, the odd pound note hasn't hurt as well. You know, and I'm glad he's gone to Rangers rather than getting rid to another club in our division like we have with Patrick Bauer. I don't want us selling players to rivals.
But talking about selling players to rivals and the odd pound note, there is the question of the tribunal. Mm. If Aribo had stayed in England, you'd be set to get a fair bit of cash for him. Since he's gone to Scotland, you're only going to get 300 grand. Isn't that a bit of a problem?
Well, it is, but the money would have just gone in Roland Scott anyway, so what difference is it, mate?
Yeah, but I think, Lee Bowyer, a lot of people have accused him of a bit of sour grapes this week because he's very disappointed that Joe has gone to Glasgow Rangers and has actually come out and said as much. And he was stating that he should have gone to Brentford rather than Glasgow Rangers. But it's the point that Johnny's raised. I think, obviously, if he'd stayed within England, you know, the tribunal decision, you know, we could have been talking about a decent amount of money that would have paid for a few more signings, potentially.
I mean, we freed up a lot of wages with, you know, Igor going and
Bauer.
But I was laughing just now because what made me laugh was I saw a tweet earlier was one of the lads from Charlton Life said, oh, well, one thing's for sure, Lee Bowyer, you won't be getting the job at Glasgow Rangers if Gerrard goes up his comment today.
But just on that point, there was a few rumblings. Obviously, if Lampard goes to Chelsea, Derby were looking possibly at Gerrard, and maybe would Newcastle be interested in Steve Gerrard? And if something like that happened, I mean, where would that leave Joe? I mean, that was the main reason, apart from the money.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I think he, that's Rangers are a big club. They can offer, they've got fantastic support. You know, it's a big stadium. They've got a big tradition, a big history. But I think Bowyer's comments in relation to Aribo going up there, I think it's more about sees him as like one of your kids. You want the best for them. And I don't think he feels that Aribo's going to be challenged as much as he would had he stayed in England and played in top-level championship or lower-level prem.
But were you surprised to see Bowyer come out and basically have a pop? Because whether it's coming from the right place or not, once Aribo's left the club, you could argue that's none of Bowyer's business. Mm. Why does he care?
This is true. I don't know. I think there was a little dig at the agent, though, wasn't there, in that? Because I think he said that Brentford inquired about Joe a couple of days before he went to Rangers, and whether or not Joe was aware of it, based on, I think, maybe the agent was thinking that was the best move financially for him and Aribo, which is obviously a factor. But I don't know. I think Bowyer's I just personally, I think he did say it from the right place in that he wanted Aribo to be the best he can be.
Well, let's face it, Lee Bowyer is a heart-on-sleeve manager. Yeah. He has been all season. And Lee Bowyer, if he wants to say something, he's going to say it. And me personally, I love it. It's refreshing. And if it's upset a few people, so be it.
Yeah, and the other thing with Lee is that he's never hid behind the fact he loved Joe Aribo to death, and he looked after him like a little baby. He wanted to nurture him, and he's probably really, really upset that he has left the club.
Can I just say, Paul, that if I was looking after a little baby, I wouldn't throw it out in central midfield against Portsmouth. That wouldn't be high on my list of protecting an infant.
But that was one of his great games, wasn't it?
It was.
I mean, he really came to the fore, and that was a great advert there for Joe, and that was one of his highlights. It's actually quite interesting. He had quite a bit of a dodgy start for Charlton. I think he made his debut in a cup game, a replay at MK Dons, and he made a mistake which led to an MK Dons goal. Yeah. And I think Carl Robinson, who was on the bench at the time, turned to one of his assistants and said, "This will be interesting now. We'll see what Joe is made of." And from the very word go, he didn't let that affect him and showed the type of character that he had from the off.
Yeah, he's a confidence player, and I just don't think anything gets him down. He's one of those, you know, he's seen on his Instagram posts, he's always quoting from the Bibles and things like that. So I think anything like that just don't get to him, does it?
And I think, personally, as we were discussing before we came in, he's got that thing you just can't teach. He's got that touch, that piece of talent that separates average footballers to, you know, class footballers. It's the one thing you can't teach, and he's so comfortable on the ball. He takes his time, doesn't look like the most doesn't dribble down the wing fast or take step overs, but he has a really magical way of keeping the ball very close to his feet and sort of slowing down the play and kind of beating players mazy runs, that type of style.
We've touched on Aribo's statement, which, as you said, was oodles of class, very, very respectful. But if he really cared about Charlton, should he have stayed in England to give you a few quid?
I think he's got to look after his own interests. You saw what happened to him just before Christmas. I'm sure the agent was in his ear saying, "Look, you've got to take the money now. This is a fantastic offer over 4 years, reputedly 20 grand a week." It's a lot of money, as I said in one of the tweets earlier this week. I mean, it's like winning the national lottery, isn't it? I mean, he's just gone from being one of the lowest paid players at Charlton to this fantastic wage up at Glasgow Rangers.
And also, let's not be naive here. Football's the only lottery in football is from us, the fans, isn't it? You know.
Yeah.
Okay, you'll get the odd Chris Solis, ones that have been there 10 years, and you know, there's very few and far between there. So, you know, as fans, we've just got to take it on the chin now. I mean, we all want to get angry. And I mean, I remember when Scott Parker left, I was fuming then. I mean, it took me about a year to get over that. But, like, you know, I'm older and wiser now, and it's just football. We've just got to get on with it.
Yeah, I don't begrudge him the move, personally.
How far can he go in the game now? Do you think it'll be Rangers is the peak and he peters out? Or actually, could we be looking at a star?
Well, I think financially wise, Rangers are in the driving seat now because they've got this player on their hands, and if they can nurture him correctly, a couple of years' time, if English Premiership teams come in, then they're going to make a fair few quid on Joe if he carries on the way he is.
On that, do you subscribe to Bowyer's suggestion that he's not going to get a move to the Premier League from Rangers?
No.
No,
because you've only got to look, as we mentioned when you ran me on the rooming mill show the other day, Virgil van Dijk. I know it was a couple of years ago, but English clubs are still looking at players from, if you're good enough, they'll come and get you.
So is there, beyond the caring father angle, is there a bit of sour grapes here from Bowyer?
Yeah, probably.
I don't know. I think is he going to get as tested as he would do footballing-wise had he stayed in the sort of top end of the Championship or played for a low end of the Premier League club? I think personally that's the only thing that will potentially hold him back from a move to the Premiership. I still think he can go on and play up at that level. I think he's good enough. But whether or not this is a not sideways step in terms of club and the type of club he's playing for, because Rangers are much bigger. I'm not denying that. You know, that's no doubt. But there is that debate about the health of the Scottish Football League in general. You know, is it as good as playing for a top-end Championship club or lower-end Premier League club?
I mean, if he can do it on a cold December night in Aberdeen, you know, he'll be able to do it anywhere, as the saying goes.
It's very, very true. When you look back on Aribo's career at Charlton, what are the moments that are really going to stand out?
Well, Joe, we were talking about this outside, weren't we? We sort of like struggled to really pick one outstanding moment out, because it didn't sort of like, weren't one of those that was whack one in from 30 odd yards, or, you know, dribble past 10 players and stick one in the top corner. But what he did do was he was consistently good every week. He was always a 7, 8 out of 10. Now and again, we get a 9 out of 10 out of him, you know. So that's my lasting memory of him.
Yeah, and in recent weeks, obviously, what stands out is that game we just touched upon against Portsmouth, which was shown on TV. And, you know, he scored a very good goal on that afternoon. And obviously, the second goal up at the Keep Moat in the first leg of the semi-final playoff.
Yeah, for me, he was on fire in the Portsmouth game. It was in front of the cameras as well, so whether or not he put an extra bit of effort in for the Sky TV cameras. But also, for me, that... It was what was evident when he was injured and also Taylor was out suspended, that we really struggled. And when they both got back into the team, that's when we went on that fantastic run. So evident how big a loss he was to the team when he wasn't in the side. And I think that just goes to sum up that consistency that you talked about, Mark.
Yeah, absolutely. What can we say? I mean, there's, you know, we've got to miss him. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, we've got to go move onwards now. So...
Yeah, he was just a major, major part of that diamond four for Bowyer. But obviously, he was just one of many links, because obviously you had Cullen and Billick, and together they were just magical. I mean, that was the fantastic part of our season last season, was that midfield. And even before that, you know, I remember Wald, who we got from Forest. I mean, he played ever so well for those first few games. So, yeah, it's going to be very difficult, but Bowyer, I think, has got the Midas touch, and I'm sure he'll find a few more gems. And, you know, I'm thinking Abby Morgan is the next light that will come through.
Absolutely.
Well, don't forget, we've got Jake Forster-Caskey as well, signed him up on a new contract, so we've always got him to come back.
Gents, I hate to say it.
That was a cracking goal.
It's coming home. Lucy Bronze with an absolute belter. England 3, Norway 0. England cruising now into the semi-finals of the World Cup. Updates throughout the show. Lots to look forward to.
This is Love Sport.
It's the Charlton Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and the guys from the SE7 pod. Delighted to say that we are also joined on the line by Matt Dainty, who's the commercial manager of West Bromwich Albion, but also a serious Charlton fan. Good evening, Matt. Thanks for joining us. Got to start with a question, because I'm reliably informed that you blew your student loan on a 10-year Charlton season ticket. I say this with respect. What on earth were you doing?
You know, one of those brainwave moments.
It seemed like a good idea at the time, didn't it, Matt?
Oh, it did. You know, at the time, we'd just gone down from the Premier League, so of course we're going to go straight back up.
10 years, though. I mean, why not spend a bit of the student loan, just get the year, and then reassess?
Well, that would have been the sensible thing to do, but, you know, we're not here to be sensible.
Yes, Matt, indeed.
Fair enough.
Matthew, it's Robert, mate. How you doing?
Hi, Rob, how are you?
Yeah, very good. Thanks for coming on. To just talk me through the... you got it at the start of the 07-08 season then, I take it, the season ticket, the 10-year season ticket.
That's right, yeah, we first went down. That was my second year of uni then.
Hang on, so it's just run out. Have you got another loan out for the next 10 years?
I've only bought it 1 year at a time since then.
Okay, very sensible, very prudent.
And so what was that? How many seasons did you get through before you had to give it up, essentially, and take up your role at West Brom?
So I got through about 6 seasons of using the 10-year season ticket, and then it dwindled off of going to fewer and fewer matches just because I physically couldn't get there because of work.
Yeah, so you saw some great football during that time as well, didn't you? We had a couple of relegations as well to boot, so that was well worth the money, no doubt.
A wise investment, if there ever there was one.
So, Johnny. So, Matt, I mean, you returned to your native Midlands with, I understand, a geology degree in your pocket, but you ended up becoming this commercial manager of West Bromwich Albion Football Club. So how did that come about, the connection between rocks and the baggies?
I think the chairman wanted me to find oil under the pitch, but I didn't
And of course, your other love is with, I think it's Step 6, non-league Paget Rangers. And I remember back in the day when we used to sit together on the away coach, you used to tell me about Paget Rangers, who at that time were defunct. So you've played a major part in reforming this team. So just tell us what's happened with Paget, as well as your love for Charlton, obviously.
Well, it's football non-stop, really. So with Paget, I restarted it in 2011. We had to start in the very bottom league, which was about step 13 or step 12 or 13 at the time. And then we've climbed up to step 6, which is where we've sort of settled. We're still an amateur club, but we're playing in the semi-pro leagues. But a couple of years ago, we won the local cup at Warsaw's ground, so that was a good achievement. I enjoyed that, and yeah, I really enjoy doing all the grassroots football, and we've got kids teams setting up now, and that takes up a lot of my time as well.
Cool.
In terms of all the time you spend working on that club, have you ever had a player through where you think, actually, you know what, he could play for Charlton one day?
Well, unfortunately, the best player that we had come through our system was a lad called Jack Storer, who got signed by Birmingham City, and then when he was playing against Wolves in the Championship, proceeded to stamp on someone's head and get sent off. Oh, and his career has tailed off, sadly, since that moment. But he was someone, I saw him play against Charlton, the under-23s for Birmingham City at the time, and I thought this guy was going to be the one to put our name out there, but unfortunately his disciplinary record got the better of him.
Oh, dear. Now, Matt, I know you have an insatiable appetite for football. I mean, how many games do you generally get to attend in a typical season?
So last season was 50 down on the season before, and I still went to 152 matches.
How? And genuinely, hang on. In practical, logistical terms, there are what, 52 weekends in a year, which is broadly when most football gets played. You're surely going midweek as well, but how many games are you seeing in one weekend?
So it would probably be at least Saturday and Sunday, but sometimes I always manage to do 7 games in 7 days. It got that ridiculous at once. Brilliant. I ended up setting myself targets of how many matches to do. So not the season just finished, but the season before, I did all 3 playoff finals, for example, at Wembley and drove back to Birmingham after each one.
But, Matt, I'm generally intrigued. Obviously, you've got this very good position at West Bromwich Albion. Do they not want you to be in attendance for at least their home games? Or do you manage to fit that in as well?
I used to have to go to all of West Brom's home games. It became part of a contractual discussion that I had it written into my contract that I didn't have to be at every
man after my own heart.
You know what? I've got that in my contract as well. I never have to go and see West Brom. It was very important to me.
By the way, can I just say, guys, Matt, keep yourself free for the end of October. You have to do the opposition view when we play West Brom at the end of October.
I'm looking forward to that match. I've already asked if I can be the Charlton mascot at that match.
Fantastic. They said you have to pay for a 10-year season ticket before you get the privilege. So,
and Matt, I asked Charlton it as well. I emailed one of the guys in the ticket office at Charlton and said, come on, you've got to pick me as the mascot, but apparently I have to be under 12.
I was about to say, Matt, I know I shouldn't ask your age, but I suspect you're a bit older than the average mascot.
Yeah, 32, so yeah, just slightly too old, I think. Mental age I might get in, but maybe not an actual age.
And Matt, in terms of your, I know when we met up at Fleetwood earlier in the season, the away game, was it Rochdale at home was going to be your first home game back at the Valley? And how many years had you not been down there?
It was over 3 years. Wow. I'd done just one game the year before that. So then I came to the Rochdale game and obviously came to the Doncaster one after that as well.
But going back, Matt, when you first came down to London, I'm actually intrigued. Why did you pick Charlton as a team to follow? Who was your team as a little boy, for example?
Oh, well, so it's actually quite an interesting, confusing story. My family was very football confused. My mum is a Wolves fan and my dad is a Villa fan. And I was taken to a Wolves match against Charlton when I was about seven and started shouting for the team in red to win because I liked the red team. And that's where Charlton came from. And I used to just nag that I wanted to go and watch Charlton play after that. So I actually supported them before I came to London for uni. I actually chose my university so I could be closer to Charlton.
Excellent. We've all done that.
And you got the loan out so you could go and see Charlton. Were your tutors particularly delighted?
The worst thing I did was on one of our exam days was the day that Swindon away playoff semi-final tickets went on sale. So I went into the exam, wrote my name on the piece of paper, handed it in, went and got to the Valley, got my tickets for Swindon away, and then resat the exam because I didn't want to miss
hang
out.
Hang on.
That's tremendous.
How many minutes did you have left at the end?
What you mean in the exam?
Yeah, do you get back for...
Well, I only stayed in the exam for the first 5 minutes. I never went back after.
Oh, you never went back? I was picturing you racing back and then finishing it in shorthand.
Oh, no. I think I went to the pub instead.
Did the degree go well, Matt?
Yeah, I passed the degree. Yeah, I got 2-1, so that was fine. And then
that's very impressive.
How did I end up working in football? I just sent my CV absolutely anywhere and everywhere, both related to my degree and not. And West Brom responded, and I started ripping tickets in the ticket office and then worked my way up since then.
Superb. Now, Matt, you did manage to get down to Wembley. How was it for you on that day? Give us your own personal experience of that wonderful day. It's about a month ago now, isn't it?
It was great because I've been to Wembley so many times watching other teams, but it was nice to actually be there watching my team play. And you go there and you don't feel the sense of occasion normally when I'm going and watching all these other matches there. But to go there and for it to be Charlton, it was... You know, I got quite emotional at the end when Bauer scored the winning goal. And it was nice to drag along some of my mates to go and watch my team do something successful for a change. And, you know, I really, really enjoyed it.
Matt, wonderful stuff. Thanks ever so much for your time. Great to speak to you. Matt Dainty there, who is, of course, a very important man at West Brom and someone who puts Charlton above all other things, which we can only respect. Seriously, staggering commitment to the cause. And he's not the only man in the history of Charlton Football Club who's been committed to the Addicts above all else. It's time for your Legend of the Week.
This is Love Sport.
Gents, who have you gone for this week?
We have gone for Mr. Keith Peacock.
So why is he such a legend of the club?
Well, I mean, he started his career at Charlton, didn't he? Must have played, 400 or 500 games, maybe more than that.
Well, we've got to tell Johnny, I don't know if Johnny's aware of it, but he was the very first ever substitute.
Yes, he's in the record books for that.
Yep.
Not just for Charlton?
No, ever.
No. Football.
Ever. When substitutes were introduced in 1965, at the beginning of the 65-66 season.
He was the first,
I think it was the opening game of the season. I think it was at Bolton Wanderers, the old Burnham Park game. And there was an injury to our goalkeeper, Mike Rose. And... he was on the subs bench. And,
so what did they do before that? If there weren't substitutes, if you broke your leg, what happened? They just threw you a crutch and said, get on with it.
Troutman broke the leg, didn't he?
No, it's tough.
But yeah, basically. Keith Peacock, definitely. He's throughout my time of supporting Charlton, he's always been there or thereabouts, hasn't he? I mean, even under Lenny Lawrence, he was in and around the club. And then obviously Alan Kirby took over with Steve Grit and Keith was there just giving him a little bit of advice, and I think he's done that for every manager since, hasn't he?
Yeah, and I can only say as a younger fan, he's been there since I've been growing up as part of the backroom staff. He worked alongside Kirbishley, didn't he, when we got promoted in 98. He said famously to Kirbishley, look away when Mickey Gray took the seventh penalty for Sunderland, and he said... Kirbishley said why, and he said, well, it's the first penalty being taken by a left footer. Just look away for some reason. Kirbishley looked away, and next thing you turn around, and we're in the Premier League. So, he's really well respected at the club. Fantastic character.
Do you think it's always helpful to have a sort of legendary figure at the club hanging around in the background behind the manager.
Yeah, I think so, because obviously with Lee Bowyer, he knew what the club's all about anyway, because he come through the ranks. But when you've got, like, say, like Carl Robinson and, you know, your Bob Peters, your Jose Rigas and that before him, he would probably say, well, don't do that, the fans won't like that, or, you know, do it this way, the fans will like it that way, you know, that sort of thing, you know, just a little snippets here or there, you know, that fatherly advice sort of thing.
Can it? I mean, obviously in his case it's been great, but in others, if we look at Fergie at United still kind of bubbling along in the stands, is that always a good thing?
I think it's a difficult one with that one with Man United, isn't it? Because he was so, you know, omnipotent. He was, you know, he was the man there. He was everything about the club went through him. His legend, his, you know, his legacy will go on forever. I think that's a very different circumstance to Keith's role at Charlton. I think everyone, you know, of a certain generation remembers him so fondly on the pitch. Very good player. I remember him fondly from what he's done, and as Mark, you said, you know, having that sort of presence on in the back rooms, back of the club, is perfect. Yeah,
I mean, Keith, back in the day, he was a very good dribbler, and his little forte, when he ran out on the pitch, he used to do keepy-uppy all the way from the players' tunnel until we got near the goal and then smashed it into the net.
I'll tell you what I also think makes him a legend is, I think if you went up to, say, a teenager supporting Charlton now, showed him a picture, so who's that? They'd know, know who it was.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I think that's what makes you, gives you that legendary status in my eyes.
And the thing is with Charlton, we've always nurtured our former players if they've been good servants down the years, and they all play a good role in the backroom staff. I think Keith's one of our sort of main ambassadors at the club, and you know, he's revered totally.
Yeah, like Paddy Power last week.
Indeed.
Yeah, you've got a fair few legends to rattle through. That is why Keith is this week's legend of the week.
This is Love Sport
Week. You're listening to the Charlton Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. And by the way, the Charlton Fan Show is going global.
Yes, it is going global. One of our fans, should we call him a fan?
I think we can call him a fan.
Yeah. John West from Thailand, he asked us to give him a shout-out. So there you go, John, there's your shout-out. Thanks for listening in, mate.
Listening all the way from Thailand. Wonderful stuff. Well, we're bringing it a little bit closer to home, a little bit closer to SE7, because there was, of course, another fans forum meeting last night talking about potential takeovers. I'm delighted to say that Wayne was there. He joins us on the line now. Good evening, Wayne. What did you take out of last night's meeting?
I found it very positive, and it opened my eyes a little bit to what actually these fans groups do on behalf of the fans. I found it very old-fashioned in what they're trying to do and achieve, and it's a really busy situation. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, talking about, you know, catering contracts, who awarded tender contracts, and, you know, is there a possibility of doing like PA system tests while there's a full stadium and so forth? Me, things like that don't interest me.
No. You know, but do they interest anyone, do you reckon, Wayne?
To be honest, mate, I think it's fans with, let's not be rude about it, but it's that sect of fans where the nylon trouser wearers. Whereas, you know, we're more of the jeans, you know, and jumping up and down and getting told off by the stewards. It's that scenario. But there's nothing wrong with them people. You know, I take that off to the dedication they put into it.
The dedication to wearing nylon trousers.
It's a great look. It's a great look.
Don't twist it. But no, in all fairness, you know, I've definitely taken that off to them. In terms of what they want to try and achieve, and you know, they say, well, we asked this last time and nothing's been done about it. Well, to be honest with you, will it be done? If you're asking about, you know, how quick the beer pumps are pouring pints, and you can't need a PA system because it's muffled in the lower west or so forth. Is it really, really that necessary? Maybe it is to certain fans, but you know, I found it a bit taken back. I thought we was there to talk about, you know, what we're going to be doing. But there was an agenda. I was just, you know, invited at the last minute. And I was there for one purpose and one purpose only, which was the, you know, the takeover.
Yeah, moving on to that, Wayne, when you walked into that room, did you have any idea beforehand that our friend Lillian de Turk wouldn't be around to perhaps answer yours and others' pertinent questions?
No, mate. No, no, not at all.
So a bit of a slap in the face there. For us fans.
Yeah, definitely a slap in the face. You know, I don't think they're doing themselves any favours whatsoever, in my personal opinion. You know, it's getting to the point now where a lot of fans, good fans, are falling out with one another on a daily basis because, you know, someone hears a snippet of something and then someone puts it out on Twitter or someone says it, and we're all falling out with one another. And we shouldn't be doing that because it's not our doing, it's what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know, and we should all be united in what we're doing rather than just, you know, battling each other constantly.
Yeah, Wayne, and on that point, actually, to be fair, you did get quite a bit of kudos for your direct list last night in terms of asking the questions that needed to be asked, which, as you said, it's, you know, it's your, that's what you want to find out. It's what the majority of the fans want to know. And, you know, because you ask the questions and perhaps others aren't have been as forthright at the fans forum meetings as people have wanted. But we shouldn't be falling out with one another. You know, we all want the best for the club.
100%.
We're all as passionate. You know, at the start of De Châtelet's reign, people were willing to give him a chance. I think that the alarm bells were there when he got rid of Powell. But still, people were willing to give him a chance. You know, I think only up until 12, 18 months ago were people, you know, united in wanting to see the back of him, maybe. But I'm personally hoping that, and I do get the sense it, you know, I do think it's close. I think that the takeover is close. It might not be as close as we want it to be, but I think he definitely wants out. And I think the longer it goes on, the worse it'll be for him. But what I'm hoping for is eventually when he does go, for us to all, you know, be united once again and kind of, you know, put aside any of those differences we've had in the time he's been there.
To be honest, mate, I think you're absolutely spot on. And I think Wembley was a proof of it. You know, walking up Wembley Way, having the goosebumps and having 37,000 Charlton fans in the stadium, maybe 10,000 weren't fans and just wanted to turn up for the day.
Wayne, do you think there needs...
buzzing.
Well, exactly, and we need to continue that feeling. To get that, do you think there needs to be clearer lines of communication between the fans and the owners?
Do you know what, mate? I'll tell you what it needs, yeah? It needs real good, solid fans. The ones who get complained about day in, week out, when the flags go up and people get on their seats. You know, the real passionate fans, the ones that run onto the pitch after the winner against Accrington Stanley. They're not thugs, they're not hooligans, they're born and bred Charlton fans. They're the ones that should be there, like myself. So, I'm no angel at football, Matt, I admit that, but, you know, we're no different from anyone else, mate.
So, Dodger, did you get any of your questions answered? I mean, I know you wanted to go in there and question Richard Murray, maybe, or things like that. Did you get any questions of yours answered that you wanted answered?
To be honest, mate, you know, I say a big thanks to Tom and Ravi from the club. I think they're under a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's very awkward for them. I've known Ravi a long time, personally, and it's very awkward. But in terms of the takeover, excuse me, when that come up in the agenda, no disrespect, I was first off the peg, if you like, and I made it quite clear and sound that, you know, I want Richard Murray to answer questions that everyone's been asking and putting around in social media sites and so forth. So I asked a direct question. Mm. And the question was, is Richard Murray preferred to go with the Aussie consortium? And if so, why? Mm. And if the Australians do and become successful in terms of owning Charlton Athletic, are they going to start stripping the assets to borrow money against it and then break us down and end up like a Bolton in a year's time? That was my concern, and I think I'd speak for a lot of Charlton fans in saying that. Now, that's been minuted in the meeting, and hopefully it will go back to the right people, and Richard Murray needs to be visible, because, you know, you can't keep on digging out Rowlands and Levend when you've got Richard Murray there. He's doing absolutely nothing other than running around trying to get a deal together to get, himself sorted out, rather than thinking about what we want as the thousands of fans, regardless.
Wayne, how many more years, how many more weeks do we think that Roland De Châtelet is going to own the football club?
Honestly, I say a week, 10 days.
Really? You're that confident of a takeover?
Yeah.
And is it
going to
be
yeah.
Mehmet Dalman from Cardiff, or is it going to be someone else?
Who knows, mate? At the end of the day, you know, names are being rattled around. You know, last night we was told that there's actually three positive parties. I think, you know, when I raised the question, there is Richard Murray supporters around the table, which, you know, didn't like my questioning. And then confronted me on, well, why am I so Dalman-led then? Well, the simple, you know, I answered the question. I said to him, well, if you go on the internet and Google the guy, he's got no bad business acumen. He knows what he's doing. He's very well respected. And he's good for any club. And I said, if you don't take that, then contact Cardiff and ask them fans.
Well, that's just common business sense, really. You only got to look into him, ain't you, really?
And we did
exactly.
That, by the way. We had a Cardiff journalist and fan on the show last week, and he was saying, listen, this is a guy who is incredibly responsible, he's incredibly good at his job, and as you point out, Wayne, he's incredibly popular.
Yeah, 1,000,000%. But then popularity, it can turn against you. You know, what you don't want is you don't want fans demanding. If someone's going to come in and spend $45 million or $50 million or $35 million on the club, you know, you can't go in there demanding and saying that you want to do this, you want to do that, you want to paint the car park in green and white spots. You can't do that. You've got to respect the fact that these people come in and it's a lot of money and it's a business to them.
Mm.
You know, we can't live on the old days of the Valley parties and all that. And I totally get that. But we've got to move on as fans. Mm. You know, we've got to leave them days and stop thinking that the club I was saying all the time. And that's where the problem is.
Well, it's a lot of money to buy a club. It's a lot of money to run one as well. Whoever takes it over, are you hopeful that there's going to be some money made available in the transfer market?
Listen, mate, we're all hopeful of that. You know, we all pray for an Abramovich and everything else, but even Abramovich now, you know, he's finding it difficult. You know, all we want, and at the end of the day, is to go there, watch a good game of football, be successful, and go home happy. That's what we want.
It's not much to ask for, is it?
Listen, mate, I don't care what he's got in the bank, and I certainly don't want to know his PIN number. I just want to support a decent level of football and enjoy it. I've got pounds there from 40 years ago. And by the way, I've got to give a shout out to Mark Anderson and the Anderson
Club. Oh, they're on holiday listening, didn't they?
Yeah, he'll kill me, mate. But, no, what I'm saying is, mate, look, at the end of the day, I just want to, like most people, I just want to watch decent football, you know, and enjoy it. I don't want all like, you know, I'm not interested in the financials of it. You know, it's a business, you know. You've got to accept it as a business.
Well, absolutely. And we can only hope that soon enough it'll be a business with a new owner. Wayne, thanks ever so much for your time. Lovely to speak to you. Wayne there, who was at the fans forum getting the inside line for us on all the latest with a potential Charlton takeover. Coming up, Marshall still hasn't signed a new deal. We've got the gaffer tied down, but Andy is important too. Don't go anywhere.
This is Love Sport.
It's the Charlton Fan Show, and it's coming home. We're 90 minutes in. It's England 3, Norway 0 at the World Cup. England's Lionesses through to the semi-final. They'll face either France or the USA. It could be four as they break. They've got a 3-on-2 here. Houghton on the right into the... No, come on. Come on, that's not how you finish a break off. But in better news, hopeless. Keep getting us excited. Now the producer's laughing at me. It's all going wrong, but I can be saved by one man and one man only. That man is Ahmed calling in from Dartford. Thank you for your call. What would you like to chat about?
I'd just like to get the panel's opinion about basically how our illustrious leader and chairman, who's cut the budget again for Lee Bowyer to use to get players, and he's also, I've heard, and I don't know if this is true, that salary caps have been put in place with regard to free transfers. So basically, he's giving us an offering to pay basically League One wages in the Championship.
Yeah,
I think Bowyer's finding it difficult to sign players as a result of that.
Oh, mate, to be honest, I didn't expect anything else, to be honest. If he's
I quite agree. It's part of the course, isn't it?
Cost-cutting left, right and centre. And the only thing is, I just believe in Bowyer so much. I know that's going to make it 10 times harder if what you say is true. And, yeah, it's going to be really difficult with what, a squad of, well, we've got 12, 13 players?
Well, yeah, 12 at the moment,
We were supposedly front runners to sign that Ruben Lameiras from Plymouth, and he's gone gone to Portugal, albeit back home to his own country, but they've offered him a four-year contract.
Yeah.
And let's face it, Roland's only willing to offer out one-year contracts,
which is what he
offered to Jake Forsakaski. So I'm quite surprised he's still signed that. So incoming players are going to think, well, hang on a minute, they're not showing me any loyalty with a decent contract. Why should I sign it? So they're under pressure.
Also, the other impact is as well, they say to themselves, well, Charlton offered me that. I'm not happy with that. I'm going to wait to see if I get any better offers first. And then if I can get away, fine. I might only consider Charlton as a last resort.
Yeah, the problem is, Ahmed, I mean, it's similar to last season, you know, when we looked at that bench for the opening game against Sunderland.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to have maybe a plethora of players who are out of contract as we get towards the start of the season, and then they'll be there available. But the trouble with that is that, I mean, they're going out to Spain on Sunday for a pre-season training camp. And, you know, they've got the bare bones. And it would be nice, wouldn't it, to have everything in place. I mean, really jealous of Stoke City this week. They signed about six players.
Yeah,
was it six?
On the same day.
Yeah, that's correct.
But as we were saying outside before we came on, it was this time last year we made our first signing of the summer in Lyle Taylor. Now, granted, the squad's in a bit of disarray from the team that went up via the playoffs. But, again, I've got so much belief in Bowyer, honestly. I don't think he'll...
And Gallen.
And Gallen, of course, yeah.
Yeah.
I think the problem is, I totally agree with you about Bowyer and Gallen and that, but the problem is they're having one hand, if not two hands, tied behind their backs, and that's what's going to make it extremely difficult.
Yeah, and I think, what as we were discussing earlier in the show, you know, Lee is definitely upset with the way we've let Aribo go up to Scotland and not getting potential money from you know, him moving to a club within these UK shores.
But he shouldn't blame himself. It's Duchalet's fault, because basically we had that ridiculous contract extension that was offered to him and then taken away, and then he was offered another contract on lesser terms.
Yeah, it shows how inept he is.
What do you think? I mean, if that happened to me, I'd be thinking I'm not wanted. You know, I'm going to leave at the first opportunity.
Ahmed, do you see us bringing in some players tomorrow? There's been rumours of a few signings.
Yeah, I've heard of Lockyer from Bristol Rovers and also Otremer from Bolton, I mean, being named. Whether they're going to sign tomorrow, I don't know.
I mean, Ahmed, if we can get those two tomorrow, that will be very positive. I think they're two good players.
It'll make the whole pre-season trip to Spain more palatable.
Yes.
Australia particularly.
I'd have thought a trip to Spain's always pretty palatable. But
if you want to send it all on the beach, yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
We can only hope. Thank you for your
They could play some beach out there as well.
They could. Thanks, Ahmed. Ahmed calling in there from Dartford on 0208 7020 558. We got on to a bit of positivity in the end, but there is still a bit of apprehension around because Andy Marshall hasn't signed a new deal.
No. Nope.
Has he been offered one? Has he rejected it? Why is the club stalling? Why have they not learnt their lesson?
Don't know. It's Jacko signed, Bowyer signed. It's quite worrying that Marshall has it, because they're a team, and you know, they brought us up as a team, and I'd like to keep them together as a team. Oh, I know we can go and get another goalkeeper coach, but you know, when we've spoken to Andy on the show, he's really positive, isn't he?
He's a fantastic guy.
He's a great talker.
Very clever as well.
Yeah.
And, like, he's a guy who understands the workings of the entire football
club. Every single fan of this club can see what an improvement he made in Dylan Phillips this season.
Yep.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, the problem perhaps with Roland, he's come out and said he only spends 2% of his time with his club. I mean, he's got no idea about the likes of Andy Marshall, and he's completely...
But 2%, sorry, Paul, to interrupt you, but 2% is farcical, because I spend 5% of my time on Charlton Athletic, and he owns the damn thing. So what is going on?
Well, that's the man's words, and he's not going to be aware of people like Andy Marshall and the part he's played. So, I mean, whether he's actually put an offer to Andy, and it's quite derisory, and I wouldn't imagine a goalkeeping coach is on fantastic money in the whole scheme of things. So he's got to look after his own interests.
Absolutely.
And he's definitely had an offer, I think, from elsewhere.
Absolutely.
So I don't blame the guy for teetering on a decision here.
No, I don't blame him either. And as I just said earlier, about 5 minutes ago, if Roland's only offering out one-year contracts and Andy's been offered a four-year, three-year contract at another club.
Yeah.
It's a no-brainer for him, isn't it?
So hang on. Is he only offering one-year contracts even to backroom staff?
Well, that's what he's offered Bowie, isn't it? Bowie's got 1 year and Jacko.
Absolute insanity.
Because he's saying if we offer him 3 year contracts, then incoming owners are going to say, oh, well, they've got a 3 year contract. We've got to pay up a 3 year thing if we want to bring our own player.
No incoming owner is going to look at a secure contract situation for Lee Bowyer and think that diminishes the value of this football club.
But again, it goes back to the point we made last week. Yes, he's doing all of these kind of cost cutting exercises or, you know, defensive moves in terms of trying to shore up the club's finances. But if he'd have signed Aribo up to a contract, you'd have been looking at maybe 5-6 million fee. So he doesn't have a clue. And like you say, if he probably doesn't understand the day-to-day importance of someone like Gallen as the coach, because he's got the Marshall, as the goalkeeping coach, because he's got the he doesn't have a day-to-day understanding of what's going on in the club, the setup, and how important Marshall is to that.
Yeah, he clearly doesn't understand the machinations of the workings of a football club.
But we're not expecting Roland to get his nylon trousers on and be down at the training pitch every day.
Well, for Dodger.
Nor does he need to have his assistants there. But actually, you need a chain of communication. We're seeing this at Chelsea now, right? Where Petr Cech has been appointed advisor of everything from pancake making to player signing. He's not there because he had a great career at the club. He's there because he's mates with Frank Lampard and he's friends with Roman Abramovich and he knows the code to his yacht. He's there to link the two.
Yep.
Where is the link? Roland can have no clue whatsoever, and that's fine. All he needs is one bloke he trusts, which should be De Turk, who pays attention. But if De Turk paid attention, he'd be at the meetings.
Well, De Turk's not even a football man. He said that himself. You know what I mean? So when Bowyer was having problems with his contract negotiations, he had to go and search out Richard Murray. He should have a chief executive in place to do that. There's no CEO.
There's no general manager, whatever her name is left.
You know what I mean?
So he's doing all the commercial deals.
We're supposedly getting a new kit.
Yeah.
Where's that? It's madness.
Probably on a sewing machine somewhere at the moment, I would suspect, rather worryingly. But we've spoken to Andy a good few times on this show. He's a lovely, lovely guy.
Top bloke.
And it is clear that he is committed to Charlton Football Club. And Paul, your point about, you know, he probably won't be on spectacular money and he's got to do the best thing for him. Absolutely. We've got to respect that. But he's going to want to stay if he can.
Of course he does.
So do you think he'll stick around?
Well, I think possibly Lee Bowie has got to speak up for him and get on the phone to Roland and push him, because he's a major, major part of that management team.
You would think that he did. I mean, the three, Gallen, Bowie and Jacko, you'd think that Marshall is as integral to that, because we like a set backup backroom staff, and those, you know, four have been integral to the success on the pitch this season. And I'm surprised he hasn't, to be honest, if, you know, been given the contract he deserves, in my opinion. Marshall.
No, absolutely. Well, on a night where the Lionesses made short work of Norway, a fantastic Lucy Bronze screamer completing a 3-0 rout. They go into the semi-final. They move forward full of positivity and a cheering David Beckham. Join us next week on the Charlton Fan Show, where hopefully, just maybe, we'll have a bit of positivity for you too. See you there.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.